Morning. Today's Daven Chulin Sadiches. We're inside Zayin Amud Beis. We are yesterday started the topic of Ta'arovus. We're talking about Issuv Heter, what happens when something which is prohibited and something permitted gets mixed together. And the topic started yesterday with a Mishnah on Sadi Vav Amud Beis, with the Yerech, with the thigh of the animal being cooked together with its Gedanasha. And so consequently, the Gemara now is going to be launching into about a four-day discussion, 4 days in Daf Yomi terminology, a four-day discussion regarding some of the most general principles of Issuv Heter. And what we learned yesterday's Daf is the basic idea that if I have Issuv and Heter getting mixed together, so there are really two considerations. One is a consideration of Yavish B'Yavish, meaning when items get mixed together. So if there was no mixture of taste one into another, so we have to take into consideration the number of kosher items of heter versus the number of usher items. And bittul will occur. Bittul will occur when there is rov. As long as you have a majority of the heter over that of the usher, so then there's going to be bittul. Precious little evidence of what I just said came up in yesterday's daf. In yesterday's daf, if you remember, we had the gidon usher mixed in with a number of other gidon. And the Mishnah told us that all the Ginnim are going to be Aser. So it sounds like exactly the opposite of what I just described. How come all the Ginnim are going to be Aser? It's just one Ginnim Asher against all the other Ginnim, which are Heter. So the Gemara later is going to ask that question, and the Gemara is going to answer that question. And when I say later, I mean not today. Tomorrow's Daf or the day thereafter, depending on when we get there. But good. So that's one issue. And the other issue, of course, is lach balach, meaning when I have the taste of one item going in and infusing into another item, so then we have to be concerned with taste. We have a principle of tam keiker. It comes up, the terminology of tam keiker actually comes up at the end of today's daf. We didn't see that terminology in yesterday's daf. But tam keiker tells us that the taste of a prohibited food is as usher as the food itself. And so therefore, you have to negate the taste. So how do you negate the taste? So the answer is really simple. You negate the taste when you no longer can taste it. Meaning, as the simplicity of that statement is, it's true, it's correct. If I can no longer taste the iser, so the taste has been negated. It's been mevatel. We were mevatel tam. But how do we know? In other words, what are you going to do? You're going to try it? You're going to see whether or not the iser is there or not by tasting it? So like I described yesterday, it's Russian roulette. You can't do that. So we had a couple of strategies in terms of how to know whether or not taste is negated. One strategy what the Mishnah gives us is basically we're gonna have to compare it to two other foods, meaning that the gid and the meat that it's cooked with is going to be compared to the Mishnah's comparison was to meat and turnip, right? Kibasa b'lefes, and so taking the same ratio and seeing if the meat infuses taste into the lefes. And if in fact that's so, so then we know that in the gid and the gid and basar scenario, so the gid has imparted taste into the basar. So one strategy is basically swap it out for two other foods which are both mutter. Another strategy which the Gemara employed yesterday is give it to a non-Jew to taste. Let him taste it. That was Rav Yochanan on yesterday's Amud Aleph. And the third strategy of the Gemara is basically let's come up with a ratio. Now when I say let's, I don't mean us. But in other words, but a ratio should be designed and developed so that under normal circumstances, we can safely say by this ratio that there's no longer taste. The ratio was introduced to us in yesterday's daf, and that's shishim. And that's going to be 1 to 60. So one part heter to 60 part iser is going to be now the level where the chachamim are comfortable to say that there's no longer time, there's no longer going to be any taste. That is basically a summary of what we saw yesterday, and we're going to pick it up yesterday. We're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. I'm Rabbi Chanina. It's on Sadi Zayin Amud Beis. It's halfway down on the Amud, less than halfway down the Amud. It's the last three words on the line. I'm Rabbi Chanina. Kishay Misharim Misharim Berotav V'Kipav V'Chaticha Uvikdera. Now, you have something also that falls into a pot, and what's in the pot? It's a stew. So there is liquid and pieces of meat on the bottom. I'm going in order over here. Rotev is a liquid. The kippah is pieces of meat on the bottom. Chatichos, you have other pieces, larger pieces of meat, and the pot itself. Meaning that all these things now are going to be, can be counted against the iser that went in. Look, well, here's what we need. We need a ratio of 1 to 60. So if I have one part iser, so I'm counting it against 60 parts heter. So what do we count towards the heter? All the contents of the pot and the pot. Now, this last point over here and the pot, what does that mean? So the Gemara discusses. So the Gemara has two suggestions in terms of what we mean by and the pot. One suggestion of the Gemara, a really interesting one, is that you know what goes against the, you know what goes in favor of Shishim and against the one? It's going to be the pot itself. Meaning, look, what we have over here is that when the one piece of Issa falls into the pot, so now it's going to spread out. And I see, I mean, of course, the taste. The time is going to spread out. And it's going to spread out to all parts of the pot. So in terms of what is able to combat that taste, so not only the contents of the pot, the liquid, the pieces of meat, the smaller pieces of meat, but the pot itself. The pot itself is assumed to be a porous entity. And so therefore the pot itself is also there to combat and to absorb and to negate the taste of the Isser. So that's one opinion of the Gemara. That's Ukadera. The other version of the Gemara is, no, of course not the Kadera itself, but Masha Bala HaKadera. No, only that which the pot absorbed. Meaning, if we could somehow know and ascertain exactly how much the pot's absorbed. I'll give a simple example. Let's say, before we cooked in this pot, let's say I previously knew that I had 10 ounces of liquid that went into the pot, and I got, and 8 ounces came out. So now I know that 2 ounces are absorbed into the pot. So those 2 ounces of liquid or taste that's absorbed now into the pot, so, and I understand, by the way, that what I'm providing over here is not a perfect science. Obviously, some of it evaporated. But again, just for the purpose of conversing and explaining the Gemara. So let's say that we can know that 2 ounces now are in the pot. So we can use the entire pot in order to negate the taste, only that which is absorbed into the pot itself. Good. So those are the two opinions of what's meant uvikadera. A little bit later on this morning, we're going to see the Gemara return to this topic of what can be used to negate the taste of the Isser. The Gemara is going to resume that, but at least at this point in the Gemara, as quoted in the name of Rabbi Chanina, you could use all the contents of the pot and the pot itself, and two versions of what we mean when we say and the pot itself, either the pot or the contents that were absorbed into the pot. On this point, by the way, Rashi over here cites that because there are two versions and because this is an Issa D'Oraisa, so therefore we're going to be Machmer, and we're not going to be able to use the entire pot in order to negate the taste, only the contents there into the pot. So says Rashi. And Rashi also points out that based on the Gemara that we're going to learn a little bit later this morning, even the contents in the pot itself that were absorbed in the pot, it's not that straightforward and simple that we're going to be able to use it, but let's hold off on that point because that's going to come up a little bit later on in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're at the midpoint of Sadi Zayin Amid Beis. It's the beginning of the line. Kol Yisurim Shepetor Misharin Ki Elohein Batsov Kaplot. So the Gemara says that, again, we're going to use this conversion method where I'm going to take the Isser and the Heter. Now, obviously, I can't taste it because tasting it obviously results in a possible violation of the Isra Torah by tasting that which is prohibited. So basically, we're going to sub it out. And when we sub it out, we're going to use onion and kaplut, right? Some other vegetable. And basically, the interaction between these two foods is going to represent most interactions of most foods. So if at this point in time now, the onion taste is negated, so that means to say that at whatever ratio we're talking about, so we're comfortable in saying that the same thing is going to be true regarding our Isra Veheter. So it's interesting you're choosing batsav kaplut, right? The onion and this other type of vegetable. Why don't we take peppers? In other words, then use peppers as our base food so that and see how it interacts with others. I bet you it's not going to be batal in whatever ratio you want to throw out there. 1 in 60, or as we're going to see a little bit later on this morning, 1 in 100. It doesn't matter. I feel a balavla batal. You throw a little bit of pepper in, you can feel it, right? You'll know. So Amr lay shi'aru chachamim day no sin tam bisrim yosem ibatz of a kaplet. So the Gemara says, okay, but the reason why we're not using peppers is that's not your standard isser. Your standard isser is not going to be pepper. Yes, there are scenarios in which we can construct in which the pepper is going to be usser. But under normal circumstances, the isurim of the Torah, the gedanasha, the chaylev, the Isurim of the Torah are more bland in nature, and we don't need to go and look for the sharpest food, the spiciest type of vegetable in terms of using as our base substitute. Our base substitute can be something like onion mixed in together with kaplut, cooked together with kaplut, because that's generally speaking how the Isurim behave. I'm Rav Nachman. Okay, and so now we have just established that in terms of negating the taste. So, again, there are many different ways in terms of how we know taste is negated, subbing it out for other foods, giving it to a non-Jew to taste, or using the method of Shishim. Now, using the method of Shishim, the Gemara is about to teach us, is basically that as long as I have 60 times whatever the Isser is, so we now know that taste is going to be negated. And so the Gemara now is going to give a couple of examples where it's going to get very detailed in terms of how to establish a ratio. So, Gid B'Shishim Ein Gid B'Naminyan. So when it comes to the Gid Anasha, for example, again, we're assuming that the Gid Anasha gives off taste. So the Gid Anasha now in a pot, so it's B'Shishim and Gid, V'Ein Gid B'Naminyan. And the Gid doesn't count toward 60. Now that's an obvious point, but we're going to make it anyway. Meaning, of course the Gid doesn't count toward 60. Meaning because the Gid itself is a Chefsa Shel Esser, it is the Asser item. And so therefore, we're going to be assuming that the taste that's given off by the Gid is coming from the totality of the Gid. So the Gid cannot be used in terms of that which is absorbing the Isser, and it's there to also help us negate the taste. So in other words, when considering the ratio of the Gid Anasha mixed in with other, cooked in with other foods, so I need 60 times the Gid Anasha, and the Gid Anasha, it cannot be applied and is not going to count towards that which is negating the taste. Good. That one's easy. Here, the next one's going to get harder. Kchal b'shishim u'kchal min aminyan. We talk here about the udder. The udder is such an interesting organ of the animal, in that the udder is mutter. One is allowed to eat the udder. We're going to discuss this in the 8th parak in detail regarding the consumption of the udder. In other words, if you want to taste milk and meat in a permissible fashion, so help yourself to the udder. Okay, I haven't seen it in the I haven't seen it in the stores. It hasn't gotten popular. I'm sure there's a good reason why, but the udder is something which is mutter. And we'll see a great story coming up in the 8th parak regarding Rav Nachman and his wife Yalta and the udder. But anyway, it's mutter. So over here now, the udder is mutter. Now, there is, of course, pockets of milk in the udder. That's the nature of the udder. And so this is what is referred to as chalav shchuta, milk that is not expressed from the animal while the animal is alive. Chalav shchuta is not in Issa d'Oraisa, it's in Issa d'Rabbanan. That point will be made clear as we get into the 8th parak of our Masechta. In the meantime, however, when we, let's say, a kchal is going into a pot, and the kchal over here has both meat and milk in it, so we have to negate its taste. Here, kchal min aminyan. So what we can do is we can take the kchal, and even though we need bittel, now again, we need bittel because there are pockets of milk in the kchal, and so we're going to need bittel because there is milk being expressed out of the chal as it's being cooked with other pieces of meat. And yes, it's true, I need shishim. I need 60 in order to negate it. But here we can count the chal as part of the shishim in order to negate the taste. We're going to come back and discuss that in more detail. That, of course, is interesting. Hold on that thought. We're going to come back to it. Beitza b'shishim vein beitza min aminyan. And when eggs get cooked together, and one of those eggs is an egg of Isser, so then you need 60 times that amount, and the egg is eino min aminyan. The egg is not counted as part of the minyan, meaning I need 60 against the egg that's prohibited. Stay tuned as we're going to be discussing the eggs in more detail as well. I'm Rav Yitzchak Breit, Rav Mishar Shok, Chal Atzmo Aser. Okay. And so now we're going to be spending just a couple minutes right now on the chal, on the udder, and it's going to get a little complicated. The Gemara says that when it comes to the udder, now, if it's being cooked in a pot with other pieces of meat, so we just established that the chal is min aminyan. That in terms of what is a contributing factor towards negating the taste of the milk that's coming out of the chal, we could use the chal itself in our favor as part of negating the taste. Then the Gemara makes another statement in the name of Yitzchak that the chal itself remains prohibited, even though it was helpful in aiding us against the taste of the milk, but nevertheless the chal itself becomes aser. V'i nafal l'kedera acheres oser. Furthermore, if this chal were to go into another pot, it becomes aser. Meaning that we're going to be treating the chal now as a chefza shel iser, as something which is prohibited. The Gemara now seeks clarification because it's really hard to understand. I'm Rav Ashi, ki avina be Rav Kahani, bailan, ki misharinim b'didei misharinim o b'may denafik b'nei misharinim. So the Gemara, this first question over here is basically a setup question. Let me ask you a question. When we are assuming that milk is coming out of the chal, so what do we say? Do we just have to count and factor in the milk that was absorbed in the chal, meaning the pockets of milk that were absorbed in the chal. But we're not going to say that it's the totality of the volume of the chal. Again, just to make this as clear as possible, let's say the chal itself is 5 ounces. Okay, it's a 5 ounce udder. And what we did, and what we are now suggesting is that the reason why the chal has to be taken into consideration, why we're treating it like isher, is because of the pockets of milk contained therein. Now, we're not saying that there are 5 ounces of milk in the 5 ounce chal. What we're saying is that a portion of it, a fraction of it, is made up of milk. So the Gemara is now saying, so when this chal goes into a pot the first time and is cooked with other foods, what are you telling me? How much do we have to consider against? 5 ounces, the total weight of the chal, or, again, just for argument's sake, 3 ounces, the amount of milk contained therein. So the Gemara says, now on that question, we all know the answer. Pshita, dibididei misha arinan. Well, of course, when we're trying to negate the chal, we have to go against all five. We don't know how much milk is in the chal, and so therefore we're going to have to assume that the chal in its entirety is totally saturated with milk, and so therefore it's going to be against all 5 ounces. I'm going to need 60 times 5 in order to create a negation of its taste. So the Gemara says, "Di'iba madanafik minemana yadinan." Gemara says, we don't know how much milk is in the chal. So the Gemara says, fine. So that means to say that in order for bittul to occur, we're going to need 60 times the entire chal. So the Gemara says, now, if you're right, and we are, meaning we are right about that, we need 60 times the total chal. So now what? So now basically what we're looking at is a scenario in which we had, again, based on my numbers, so 60 times 5, we have 300 ounces now that it was cooked in, and so now we have bittul. So the Gemara says, if you're right about this, so now let's take the next step into consideration. Now that we have negated the chal, so why are you telling me now that if I were to pick up this chal, A, it itself is still usur, B, if I throw it into another pot, so then it's going to usur the meat in the second pot? The Gemara says, I don't understand. We've just totally negated the milk therein. Meaning, didn't we just all resolve that in order to negate the chal, I need to negate against the totality of it? That seemingly seems to indicate that all the milk has come out of the chal during the cooking process, the first time it was thrown into the pot. And so that means to say now that there's literally no isser left inside of it. And why are you telling me that the chal is isser? And why are you telling me that when I throw it into another pot, the second pot is now going to be prohibited? So elamayata nafala kadera cheres lo yaser. It shouldn't become usr if I threw it into another pot. So the Gemara is basically trying to wrap its head around this concept of the chal. So the Gemara says, "Kevin damar Yitzchak b'Rei Devar Mishasho chal atzmo usr shavim rabbanan kechaticha de nevela." So the Gemara says like this: because the chal itself becomes usr, meaning even in a scenario of bittul, even when I have 60 times the amount of the chal itself, and I'm mevata the chal, so that only means as follows. Now, in order to explain this a little bit better, let's take the following into consideration. What is the problem with the chal? The problem with the chal is not the udder, meaning not the meat of the udder, but it's the milk therein. So when we take now into consideration the chal going into a pot, you should not cook it in a pot with other meat, meaning that part's clear. In fact, later on, when we talk about the preparation of the chal, so what you have to do is you have to cut it, squeeze out whatever milk you can. Obviously, there's still going to be milk left over, and you roast it. And that's how you prepare the chal. But don't cook it in a pot with other meat. Okay, now, again, what's the issue when it comes to the chal? The issue with the chal is the milk that's inside of the chal. Now, well, here's what happens. Milk, in other words, when we're talking about plate and we're talking about taste going from one food into another, so this is in halacha and Isser V'Heter, it's called plata, right? The discharge that comes out of it. And so when considering now the chal, so we have to consider now that discharge is a two-way street. Meaning, let's start with the chal. The chal now has milk inside of it. So when I throw it into a pot and cook it, so that means to say now the milk is going out from the chal into the pot, into all the other food. Good. If I have shishim against that, so we've negated the milk going from the direction of the chal into the other food. And that's why all the other food now is totally fine. because we've negated the taste, assuming that we have shishim. Let's go now in the other direction. In the same pot now that I just described, I also have the taste of meat of all the other foods going into the kal. Now, when I have the taste of all the other meat going into the kal, so now what do I have in the kal itself? Although we would like to say that the milk inside of it becomes negated, but that's not true. The milk that discharges out of the kal, so that's going to be negated. But there's still going to be, of course, residual pockets of milk in the kal itself. That now, those little pockets of milk, they become prohibited. Because they become prohibited, so now the Gemara says, that's why kal atzmo asur. The kal itself remains prohibited, because we're going to still assume that there are significant trace amounts of milk that become prohibited in the kal itself. The Gemara's language is shav yirabban kechaticha de nevela. We're going to be treating the kal itself like a chaticha of nevela, and even though it's not really the kal itself that becomes asur, it's the milk content of the kal that becomes asur. But once that becomes asur, the chachamim have treated the kal like an item, like a chefta of iser. Okay, so that is, and like I said, that's why it gets a little bit complicated. We have to take into consideration the transfer of taste going from the kal out, and the transfer of taste going from the pot into the kal itself. So even though, as far as the pot is concerned, it's mutter, but the kal itself remains prohibited. And even if I then take it and move it into another pot, it still becomes prohibited. Let's continue. We are on study Zayin Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud Beis. B'shishim v'ein beitzah b'naminyan. The egg is, if the egg now is cooked in a pot with other eggs, so I need 60 times the amount. So I'm Ravidi bar Avin la'abai l'memra, diyaveh taima. So the Gemara says here, I'm a little bit confused. When we're talking about an egg, let's assume we're talking about a standard unfertilized egg. And it's as such, how much flavor and taste does an egg have? Now, I know eggs are pretty popular and people like eggs, but the Gemara's assumption is that there's no real taste in an egg, right? The white doesn't have much taste to it, and the yolk, which obviously has more taste to it, but the Gemara still assumes that there's no real taste in an egg. Now, even if the egg was produced by a non-kosher bird, we're not allowed to eat that egg. That's all a given, of course. But if this egg were to be cooked in a pot with other eggs, so what then becomes the problem? Assuming that we can identify the non-kosher egg, and so what now becomes of the taste of that egg as it permeates through the rest of the pot? It's only going to create a problem under the assumption that there's taste in an egg. Is there taste in an egg? The Gemara assumes right now no. Amle Ravidi Barav and Labai Lamema Diavi Time of Ahamri Inshi. Go around and ask people what their perception is regarding the taste of an egg. Kimai de beba alma. There's a popular expression back in the day that doesn't taste like anything. You know what that tastes like? It tastes like the liquid of an egg. Meaning people's general perception is that the egg, the unfertilized egg, does not give off any taste. Fine. And so if there's no taste emanating from an egg, and when I say no taste, by the way, obviously there's fluid coming out of the egg. There's some discharge. But if it doesn't have ta'am, so then it's not usr. It doesn't create an isr. The isr is only tam ke'ikr, only if there is a recognizable taste or flavor that comes out of it. But if it's totally imperceptible, so then the ta'am is, it's mamish nothing. So if that's true, why do I need shishim, 60 other eggs in the pot of the against the one egg which is prohibited, if in fact we're assuming that the one egg is expressing no significant taste? So So the Gemara says, okay, but you're making a false assumption. You're assuming that we're talking about an unfertilized egg. No, what happened was that we threw a whole bunch of eggs into the pot, and unbeknownst to us, one of the eggs that we threw into the pot, kosher egg, but it had a chick inside of it. And so what now is usr is the taste of the chick now that unfortunately is being cooked in a pot with other eggs. And only when I have shishin to counteract that taste, then is it going to be mutter. Aval tamei lo, so the Gemara says, really? So a non-kosher egg does not give off taste? Are you sure about this? Meaning a non-kosher, unfertilized egg. Eisvei, the Gemara challenges by quoting a brisa, Eto Sefta. The brisa over here says that if I have a non-kosher egg cooked with other kosher eggs, if it's no Saint Tom, if it's imparting a taste, meaning the ratio is less than 1 to 60, so then it's going to be prohibited. So the Gemara says, the brisa we just learned together is talking about the non-kosher egg being really a kosher egg with a chick inside of it. And the Gemara says it's called a beitza tamea because once it has a chick inside of it, it's not kosher, so therefore the language used by the Brisa is beitza tamea. The Gemara says, okay, but I'm still not convinced. Because now we're going to do is we're going to go ahead in the Brisa and see the next section of the Brisa. The end of the Brisa deals with, again, eggs being cooked, and one of the eggs has a chick inside of it. So, michlal deresha deleis beyefroach haskinan. Now, when you contrast the beginning of the brisa and the end of the brisa, what comes out very clearly is that the beginning of the brisa must be talking about an unfertilized egg, because the end of the brisa is talking about where the prohibited egg has a chick inside of it. So the Gemara says, Purusha kamefarish. Nah, that's not the way to read the brisa. The way to read the brisa is that the latter half of the brisa is there to just simply clarify the first half of the brisa. Beitzim tarush shakam and beitzim tamim yeshbem b'mrosin tam kulam asurus. Ketzad. And the way to read the brisa is that the second half of the brisa is just amplification. Ketzad. Kegon shakam nimsa afroch b'achas mehem. Where I find a chick inside one of them. So hachinami mistabra. The Gemara says, and I'll tell you what. It's not a forced reading of the brisa. I really think this is the smoothest way to read the brisa. Dizagadach resha deleis be'afroach. Because if you think that the beginning of the brisa is talking about where there was no chick inside the egg, hashta deleis be'afroach, asura deis be'afroach mibaye, because let's take into consideration. If the first half of the brisa was talking about an unfertilized non-kosher egg, and that creates iser, where it's questionable whether it has taste or doesn't have taste, if the first half of the brisa is telling me that that is going to give off iser, so for sure, an egg with a chick inside is for sure going to give off iser. And I wouldn't need the second half of the brisa. So imishim halo iria. The Gemara says, okay, as much as I hear that argument, it's not a compelling argument. Tana seifa legluya resha. I could say that the resha and the seifa are not complementing one another. It's not that the seifa is there to explain the resha, but rather what it's serving is a gilui, meaning it's there to contrast. So shalot tamer, because don't say resha di isbe afroach avale isbe afroach shaya. Maybe by virtue of the fact that the second half of the brisa is talking about an egg with a chick inside of it, is there specifically to go out of its way to tell us that the first half of the brisa is one where it does not have a chick inside of it. And still it's going to be aser. So, as far as this brisa is concerned, so is the first half of the brisa talking about an unfertilized egg coming from a non-kosher bird? Debatable. On one hand, you can argue that it is talking about an unfertilized egg of a non-kosher bird, and it got cooked in the pot with other eggs, and it gives off taste. Or no, maybe the first half of the brisa is talking about where it has a chicken side. That's the second half of the brisa. The second half of the brisa is just there to clarify what the first half of the brisa meant. And so basically, a debate in the Gemara, although the expression of people seems to be what the Gemara favors, but a debate in the Gemara whether or not an unfertilized egg has taste, has tam. If it has taste, that taste needs to be negated, assuming, of course, the egg is not kosher, and so that taste needs to be negated. If it doesn't have taste, so then the taste doesn't need to be negated. You still, of course, have to take out the non-kosher egg. You can't eat the non-kosher egg, but a question in the Gemara whether unfertilized eggs give off taste.
Rabbi Shoygo, why isn't the chick considered virya?
The egg, you mean? The egg being a beria, or the chicken side, or the egg. The egg also maybe is a beria. That's a good question.
I thought it was going to board it.
Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. We are Tzadi Chesam and Aleph, a little bit less than halfway down on the Amud. Hahu Kizaisa Tarba. There was a Kizaisa fat. Chalef. The nafal b'dikula that fell into a pot, the bisra of meat. So, okay, standard case of iser v'heter. So I have now chalev, forbidden fats, that a full kazais went into a pot. So savarav, now we have asi or ashi l'shura b'may debala dikula. Okay, so now I return back to a discussion that we had earlier. We have to negate the taste of the chalef. All right, let's say the chalef dissolves in total. And so now I have chalef taste flavor throughout the entire pot, and that taste needs to be negated. So good, and I need shishim, and we all know this at this point in time, that I need shishim, I need 60 parts in order to negate its taste. So now, what am I going to do? So what I'm going to do, of course, is take into account the contents of the pot, and see what the volume is of the content of the pot. But what Rav Ashi now is arguing is, oh, but let's not forget about the pot itself. The pot itself now let's not assume like we did earlier this morning, that we're just going to simply take the volume of the pot itself, the actual material of the pot itself, and use it as part of what we can use to negate the chalev. But certainly the pot absorbed food. And so at least the absorbed food in the pot, that could also be used in terms of negating the chalev, right? So I'm the Rabban, the Rav Ashi, the Chacham said to Rav Ashi, no. And here the Gemara basically says you can't do that. And the reason why you can't do that is as follows. Because, of course, you're right. There is absorbed food in the pot. Good. That's a given. But not only is there absorbed heter in the pot, there's also going to be absorbed iser in the pot as well. Meaning, when all said and done, the chalev that goes into the pot, some of it now is actually going to go into the walls of the pot as well. So as much as your argument is good that there's absorbed heter, but there's also absorbed iser in the pot. So basically they are going to cancel each other out. And so the only thing we have left in terms of what can we use to negate the taste is only the contents of the pot, and that's it. How pagod does iser detarp is enough of the kul of the bisra? We have a case now similar, but with one important change. And here it wasn't a full kezayis of chalev that fell into a pot, but rather a half a kezayis of chalev that fell into a pot. Half a kezayis of chalev. Now, in order to violate the Isra Torah of chalev, you have to eat a kezayis. Now, that's not totally true. Even though I said it, that doesn't mean it's correct or true. In other words, how about this? In order to get malchus for eating chalev, you have to eat a kezayis. Good. That statement we could stand by. That's a good statement. Now here we have a half a kezayis that fell into a pot. Now it's debatable whether a half a kezayis is an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan. You remember the machlokas that we saw in the eighth parak of Yuma between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether chatzi shir is asur min haTorah. Rav Yochanan says chatzi shir is asur min haTorah. Reish Lakish says chatzi shir is not asur min haTorah. Fine. So we have that debate. And over here, what the Gemara would like to do now is suggest that because it's only a half a kezayis of chalev fell into a pot, now I wouldn't need 60 half kezayisim of the contents of the pot in order to nullify it. You know what? 30 half kezayisim. Well, now, good. That's the correct reaction. What just happened over here? So the, right, the discount?
No, but it's 61, right?
You mean the same as
volume-wise, it's 30, but it's half.
No. Okay, your math is good. I hear what you're saying, but I'm just presenting it like the Gemara, and you'll see, everything will become clear. So there was a thought in the Gemara. Marbar Rav Ashi said, you know what? In order to negate it, I don't need 60 halves of content. I just need 30 halves of content. Now Amar Le'avu Alav Amin Alach Lo Tezalza B'Shur D'Rabbanan. So the response was from his father, I told you, this is not a time to be mezalza b'shura d'rabbanan. Meaning, if you're going to assume that the chatzi kezayis of fat that fell into the pot, even if you're going to assume that's an issa d'rabbanan, okay, issa d'rabbanan, still an issa d'rabbanan, don't think yourself now, because it's an issa d'rabbanan, so in terms of bittul, you know what, let's give ourselves a little bit of a break. Normally we need 60, it's an issur d'rabbanan, you know what, 30 is enough. So point number one is, even if it's just an issur d'rabbanan, so that doesn't mean that we're allowed to be makel in terms of how much we need to negate the taste. We're still going to need 60 times that amount. So it's not 30 halves, of course it's going to be 60 halves. That's number one. Number two, v'od amar Rav Yochanan, chatzi shir asur min haTorah. And even your starting point, even your assumption may not be correct. Meaning you're thinking that because it's a chatzi kezayis of fat, it's an issa d'rabbanan. No, it's an issa d'oraisa. Meaning a kezayis is when I need to get malchus. But if I have chatzi shir, So chatzik shir is also min haTorah. And by the way, chatzik shir does not literally mean that it's half, and only half is going to be aser. Chatzik shir means a fraction of the iser is still going to be aser min haTorah. It just happens to be that in terms of punishment, punishment will not be given until you get to the shir. Rav Yochanan says chatzik shir is aser min haTorah. So even your starting point is incorrect. It's not even iser derabanan. But 2 points I want to make, says the father. One, if it were nisa derabanan, you can't be mako on the ratio. And two, may not be nisa derabanan. It's a nisa deraisa, chatzi shir, as a minatar. Okay. Amar Hashem Rabba, Amar Avidi Bar Idi, Bar Gershom, Amar Levi Bar Parta, Amar Rabbi Nachum, Amar Rabbi Biryam, Mishum Zakin Echad, Rav Yaakov Shmei, Debei Nisiya. So this is a long Masara over here. Amru Beitza Beshishim Asura Beitzim, I'm sorry. Amru Beitza Beshishim Asura. So we're going back to, and we're revisiting the eggs and the amount that we need in order to negate the egg. Now again, as we already saw earlier this morning, a debate in the Gemara whether or not we're talking about an unfertilized non-kosher egg or we're talking about a kosher egg, egg coming from a kosher bird, but it has a chicken side which is going to be prohibited. Okay, so debatable what the circumstance is, but in either event, if I have a non-kosher egg that is cooked with other eggs, and I need to negate the taste, I need 60 other eggs. Now, shishim v'achas muteres. Now, we're contrasting 60 and 60 to, and 61. Now, seemingly what we mean over here is the following: that if I have one non-kosher egg against 60 other eggs, so that's not enough, even though normally shishim would be sufficient. I would need 61 kosher eggs against the one non-kosher egg. Now, why over here by eggs are we giving a little bit of a bump? It's a chumrah. In other words, we're going to need now an additional kosher egg. So stay tuned as we're going to explain that in just a moment. I'm a Rebbe Zera, Rebbe Shemon Bar Abba, Reisha, Atamato, Bagvul, Heter, Sharishne, Gedol, Ador, Lord, Pirshu, Sadavar. You know, I've asked this matter to two Gedolim. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmini, Tarvai Mishmei, Rabbi Yoshua Ben Levi, Amru Beitza B'Shisha Masur, B'Shisha V'Achas Muteres. So again, the contrast between 60 and 61, V'Ibailu, B'Shisha V'Achas B'Hadidida, Odim Labar Mina. And I seek clarification. When you said 61, were you including the non-kosher egg? Or is that excluding the non-kosher egg? V'lo Pashit. And he didn't give me an answer. Umar Pashit Le'Mishat. And you think that this matter is so straightforward, and you have a clear opinion on the matter? How can you be so cavalier of expressing an opinion when, meanwhile, I couldn't get a straight answer from the Gedolei Hador? Itmar, the Gemara comes back on this point. I'm Rabbi Chaba. I'm Rav Huna. Beitza b'shishim v'hi asura, b'shishim achas v'hi muteras. So the Gemara over here records a final ruling that when it comes to eggs, and I need to negate the non-kosher egg, I need 61 kosher eggs and not just 60 eggs. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara does not give a reason why. The Gemara does not give an explanation in terms of why by eggs. So are we bump up our numbers of bittul, and I need 61 against the non-kosher egg. Rashi over here, interestingly, also does not comment on this matter. Really interesting. Like Rashi just assumes that we get it. Probably, and when I say probably, other Rishonim say this, the Ramban says this, that when it comes to eggs obviously are more or less the same size, but they're of course not all exactly the same size. We're so used to buying the eggs in the cartons and everything is already weighed and measured, and you know, and the large and the extra large. So, you know, in our minds we think, oh yeah, all eggs are all the same size. Yeah. when time is taken in terms of measuring the eggs, but eggs are not all the same size. And so therefore, when I have an egg that's also mixed in with other eggs, because of the discrepancy of the sizes of eggs, so to make sure that we have actually 60 times that this particular egg, so I can't just simply say, let's count eggs, and that's going to assure that we're going to be at 60 to 1 because of the size discrepancies, and to give us a little bit of a cushion, so that's why we need 61. That's probably the reason why you need an extra egg in order to be mevatel the taste.
But it could be anything else also.
That there are others who say that the reason you need the other egg, he gives that one about.
Yeah, yeah.
He also says because the egg has a status of an entity.
Yeah, yeah, it's a birria. Yeah, but right. Right. Yeah, that's it.
It's
a difficult shot. Ben just, you know, he
shouldn't be at all.
Right, he read my mind. So it's a difficult pshat. I mean, I hear it, and I heard it before, but it's a difficult pshat because by beria there's no bittel.
Yeah.
Right, right, okay.
Why are we going by counting? It should be by volume all the time because it applies to everything else.
Right, I mean, okay, fine. It is really volume. It's just that this ensures that we have the proper volume.
But the Gemara says some of the he. The he is the also, right?
Right.
So it means 59 plus that one?
No. The Gemara's conclusion is that shishim vihi asura. 60 and it is going to be asura, yeah. Meaning 60 to 1 is insufficient.
You need...
And the Havamin of the Gemara thought otherwise. Correct. Correct. Okay. How would also come into Rav Nachman bar Rabbi Amalei Abba lo shir bar arba'im v'shava v'ani yashar arba'im v'chamesh? Now over here we're going to seem to be playing around with our numbers. Now earlier there was a suggestion that if it's a chasi shir, so you don't need shishim, but even that the Gemara just knocked out right away. Meaning the Gemara says no, shishim is an absolute. The Gemara over here now is a couple of lines which... kind of, whatever. We just read it, translate it. So, somebody came to Rav Nachman Rebbe. So, Amalei Abba lo shir bar v'sheva v'ani asher bar v'chamesh. My father wouldn't tolerate negating in 47, and you want now me to do 45? Meaning, basically, somebody came over to him and made a request. You know, I have 45 times the iser. Is that enough? And his response was, you know, my father didn't do 47. I mean, his father wouldn't have done 48. And you know, I can keep going up in numbers until I get to 60. How dasal come to Rav Shimon bar Rebbe? Wait, one second. Amra, how dasal come to Rav Shimon bar Rebbe? Amalei Abba lo shir b'mem hei v'ani asher b'mem gimel. In a similar exchange, where someone went to the son of Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Shimon, and said, would you do for me for 43? And he says, you know, my dad wouldn't do it for 45. And again, and it's funny. Like, why are they throwing out these numbers? I understand. Look, we're going to get a little more clarity. How would also come to Rabbi Chia? And one last round of this. I'm like klum yeshloshim. So and Rabbi Chia says, do you even got 30 in there? And it sounds like he's ready to be makel by 30. And all these scenarios. Right, 47, 45, 30, meaning all this is far from the mark. In order to negate taste, you need 60. That's pretty much been drilled into us. And what's going on with these with these Tanayim, right, all of them, what's going on with these Tanayim where they're basically entertaining, you know, a little bit less, would have been okay. So time is like a shloshim, aika shloshim, misharina, and the Gemara asks exactly that question. So I'm Rabbi Chanina Guzma. So Rabbi Chanina says that when these Chachamim were speaking, they were speaking in hyperbole. Meaning, you don't even have 30. Like, there's nothing to talk about over here. And even if you did have 30, there's still nothing to talk about over here. But in other words, they're just speaking Balashan Guzma. Okay. How much do I need to negate taste? Now, that seems to be a funny question at this point in the shir. Right? We are winding down to the end of today's shir, and we heard that yesterday as well. And I think we all know the answer. Meaning the answer is shishim. As we're going to see in just a moment, that is an opinion, and it is the accepted opinion, but in terms of the only opinion, it's not the only opinion. Am Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mishim bar Kapar, Kol Yisrim Shebetorah, Bishishim. So when it comes to Kol Yisrim Shebetorah, any Yisrim in the Torah, so in order to negate the taste, I need shishim. I'm a lefan of Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yitzhak, Rabbi Ato Amar Kain, Hachi Am Rabbi Asi, Am Rabbi Yeshua Melevi, Mishum bar Kapara. Now it's interesting, it goes back to the same Makor, it goes back to Rabbi Yeshua Melevi quoting bar Kapara. But this is, previously we had Rabbi Chia quoting it, and this is now other Amoraim who are quoting it in the name of Yeshua Melevi bar Kapara. Kol Yisrael Shebetorah b'meya. So I need not 60, but 100. So over here, two opinions in terms of what numbers I need in order to be mevatel the taste. Now, how do we get to these two numbers of 60 versus 100? So it all stems from an interesting scenario, an interesting mitzvah in the Torah. Vishneim lo limdua ela mizroa b'shela. Dechziv lakach hakon zroa b'shela. Okay. Now, it all comes from the zroa b'shela. Zroa b'shela. So we know that the Nazir... as part of the conclusion of his Nazirus, so he is going to be bringing, as one of his carbonos, so he's going to be bringing an ram. Now, this ram that he brings, so part of the ram goes to the Kohen. That's the Zroa. The leg of the ram goes to the Kohen, and the rest of the ram is going to be consumed by the Nazir himself as a standard Shlamim. Now, this is interesting. The Zroa that is going to go to the Kohen, so it has the status of Truma. It is, to think about it, by the way, it's exactly, it behaves like Truma, meaning it's a section of a, now, Truma normally, of course, comes from produce. This is an animal, but there's a section of animal that is now dedicated to be eaten by the Kohen and only by the Kohen. A non-Kohen who were to be eating the Zroa Bishela is going to be in violation of a Zar, a non-Kohen eating, I'm going to use the word loosely over here, Truma. And so therefore, for the rest of us, the Zroa is Usser. And meanwhile, the Torah, in terms of its instructions of how to prepare it, so according to most opinions, you'll see there is one opinion who does not agree, but according to most opinions, the Zroa is going to be cooked in a pot together with the rest of the animal. And despite the fact that it's all cooked together, we're going to take the contents there out of the pot and hand the Zroa over to the Kohen, and the rest of it's going to be consumed by us. Now, a couple of things to take into consideration over here. In other words, this is a case of min bimino, meaning we're talking about meat. So the meat of the Zroa is going to go into the meat of the rest of the animal. So understood that this is not going to be our classic example of negating taste, as really though everything tastes the same over here, it's all meat. So that part, I'm on the front end. I'm acknowledging that that's where this discussion becomes a little bit tricky, but if we could just put that aside for a moment, and now let's analyze what's going to happen from here going onward, because this is going to be where we're going to see the debate of whether I need 1 to 60 versus 1 to 100. Vitanya. We learned the following brisa, b'sheila. Ein b'sheila ela shlema. So the Tanakhama says that the word b'sheila means that you have to cook it in its entirety, meaning, and not to be separated. We'll explain that a little bit better in just a moment. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer, ein b'sheila ela shlema b'sheila im ha'ayel. Cooking means that's to be cooked with the rest of the ram. Now, dekule ama behadi ayo mevashela. Now, the Gemara over here assumes like this. How to understand the brisa? Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. At what point are they disagreeing? There's some disagreement. At what point are they disagreeing? So the Gemara starts off with the assumption that, well, they really both agree that the leg is cooked together with the rest of the ram. Just a question of whether or not you first cut it, then cook it, or cook it and then cut it. Okay. V'i b'yseima, or maybe dekule ama mechatech levahad mevashala, or maybe no. Everyone agrees that first you cut the leg off and then you cook it. Miu marsaver b'hadei mevashala, marsaver b'kidei recheres mevashala. And then it's just a debate in terms of whether or not the leg is cooked separately from the rest of the ram or it's cooked together with the ram. Now, l'lishna kama liba de divrei hakol. So now, the way we first explain the machlokas, it comes out that everyone agrees that the leg is cooked with the rest of the ram. It's just a question of, do I first cut it and cook it, or cook it and then cut it? L'lishna basra liba de Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Now, the second way we explain the machlokas, so at least according to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, it's cooked together. The leg and the lamb are the leg and the ram are cooked together. Now, so for 3 out of 4 opinions, the leg and the rest of the ram are cooked together, despite the fact that for you and I, non-Kohanim, we're not allowed to eat the leg. Now, mandam Rabbi Shishim. So here we have a scenario of Isser v'Heter getting cooked together in the Torah. And yes, it's unusual, and the Gemara is going to comment on this in just a moment, that the Torah is endorsing Isser v'Heter to be cooked together. But now we assume that it's cooked together, and what? And bittel. And there's enough ram against the Zroa to affect bittel. Now, how are we, what kind of ratio are we looking at over here? Mandam Rabbi Shishim Saver, Basavat Samas Bade, Basavat Samas Misharinan. So the one who says Shishim, because when he is looking at the ratio, he's looking at the totality of the leg versus the totality of the rest of the animal. Bones included. Vahavale Bishishim. And now, if you do the computation, you'll find that it will be just about 1 to 60. Mandam Rabbi Meya Saver, Basavahade, Basav Misharinan, Vahavale Bemeya. And the one who says that's 1 to 100, it's because he doesn't look at the bones. He ignores the bones. And he's just looking at the meat. and from a meat content, so it is 1 to 100. And the Gemara now is using this as our platform of establishing how much you need in order to affect bittul. Now, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up. I know we're still in the middle of a sentence, but this is a really strange and unusual source of describing bittul. As I already pointed out, this is a case of min bimino. It's not a case of min b'sheino mino. So already from that end, it's a little bit strange that this becomes our source. And on top of that, as the Gemara is going to point out, this is an unprecedented scenario in which the Torah allows for Issur v'Heter to be cooked together. And how can you write? And how can you create precedent from something that's unprecedented? So we will discuss that as well tomorrow. So many things, many loose ends to tie up. Let's just quickly recap. Today, right, we are now embedded in Issur v'Heter. So we talked about, for the most part today, the negation of taste. If I have tam issur that goes into other foods, being cooked together and going into other foods, so how do we negate the taste? So the answer is we negate the taste by negating the taste. But how do we know that taste is negated? So that was what we discussed over the course of this morning. The simplest way to just summarize today's daf, bishishim, I have 60 times that amount. But then the details of sometimes it's got to be a little bit more than 60. By eggs, it has to be a little bit more than 60. Sometimes I could use the item itself as part of the 60. That would be in the example of the chal. What about the food that was absorbed in the pot? Can that be used as part of the volume to negate the 60? The Gemara's answer really was no, effectively no. Even though the Gemara did suggest that on Sadi Zayin Amud Beis, but on Sadi Ches Amud Aleph, the Gemara pretty much rejected the idea of using the contents absorbed into the pot as part of that which negates the taste. And then at the end of the Gemara, today's daf, we discussed the machlokas of whether the negating ratio is 1 to 60 versus 1 to 100, and we're in the middle of the discussion of where we get the source from.